thoughts and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Enjoy this encore presentation of Meet the People.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Bill, I've got a, here we go. I do have a promotion.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I've got actually all the information this week.
Wow.
McDonald's, budget printing and copies. I'm throwing out another recommendation for them. If you live in the Reading area, they are at 2647 Bocelli Lane, and they are open Monday through Thursday, 8 to 5, and Fridays, 8 to 2, but I was there at 3, and they were still there, so Fridays are flexible. But they are great, and they'll whatever you're trying to print, big, giant pictures, or you need a whole bunch of copies, or you need some quick, you know, business cards or something like that, these guys are terrific. So they are right by the bowling alley there. What is it? Liquor Barn and H&R Block. I probably should say H&R Block since a lot of people are probably just there. Those guys are terrific. Their phone number is 530-222-0322, but you should just go in, because every time I've needed something, I basically just waited or I left for an hour and came back and it was done. So can't say that enough about businesses in town. Any other things we were supposed to announce?
We have a guest.
Phil's got the blank look.
Well, let's introduce our guest.
I have not stumped the panel in a long time, so no. You were due. All right. So today, we're chatting with a comedian. How great is that? You can't have too many comedians on Sunday. Oh, Salvador Litvak. So excited. He has this terrific book, Let My People Laugh, The Greatest Jewish Jokes of All Time. And as a kid who grew up in Connecticut in a Jewish neighborhood, I gotta say, this is exciting for me. Let's see. He was born in Santiago, Chile, which is... It was kind of confusing when I first saw that. Moved to New York at the age of 5. He's a graduate of Harvard College with an English degree. Went to NYU Law School. And it just says NYU Law School, but I did a little more homework. He actually got his law degree, passed the bar, and practiced law. Then he went to the School of Theater, Film, and Television at UCLA.
And, that sounds like a lot more fun.
Practice law and went, meh. He'll tell us the rest. He wrote, produced, and directed Saving Lincoln, the true story of Abraham Lincoln leading the nation through the Civil War, as recounted by his close friend and bodyguard, U.S. Marshal Ward Hill Lehman. The film was made by capturing the actors' performances on green screen stage and creating all the sets and locations out of vintage Civil War photographs from the Library of Congress. Pretty neat. Named his visual style Cinecollage. His first film was a Passover comedy. Can't have too many Passover comedies. Out here in the West, I don't think they fully appreciate it, but in the East, guarantee you they watch this every year. It's called When Do We Eat? It stars Max Greenfield, Jack Klugman, Ben Fieldman, Cherie Appleby, Leslie Ann Warren. So, really cool people. He wrote both films with his wife, Nina. And he also blogs as the Accidental Talmudist for the Jewish Journal of Los Angeles. I got a thing from A.J. Rice that he had made comments on several things, actually. And the most recent was Trump backs the $5,000 baby bonus for new moms in a bid to reverse the declining birth rate. And he had has a fun post, and I'm not going to read it because that'll wreck it. I'm going to let him do it. Sal, how's it going?
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
I like your thing, my pal Sal.
I am your pal Sal. You haven't met yet, not your pal.
My pal Sal. I saw that. I was like, oh, yes. So were you funny in law school, and did they appreciate that?
There were a lot of dry people in law school, believe it or not. And that's probably why I'm a recovering attorney.
You went to court and you were like, what? It doesn't get more fun there either? Dang it. That's funny. I discovered that and went and got my credential and went to school. I was like, oh, my gosh, it's just like when I was a kid. I'm in trouble all the time. Yeah,
you got to love what you do, and if you can say that, then you never work a day in your life.
Oh, there you go. Well, I have no idea where you'd like to start today, but we want to plug all your things, including your new film, Guns and Moses, which I just thought was hilarious. But it doesn't sound hilarious. It actually sounds kind of serious.
It's an action thriller. It's coming out this summer in theaters across America, starring Mark Feuerstein, Christopher Lloyd, Neil McDonough, and Dermot Mulroney. And it's a story of a rabbi whose community is violently attacked. And when the police won't investigate, he has to become the detective. And as he gets closer to the truth, the danger piles up. People get killed, and he has to learn how to use a gun and use it effectively. And the firearms training that the rabbi goes through in the movie is based on my own training in a security organization. You know, I didn't grow up as a gun guy, but I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm a visible Jew, and there's a lot going on in the world now that's dangerous.
Yeah.
And so a lot of us have, you know, bought guns and learned how to use them and got licensed for CCW. And please God, we should never need these skills. But if we do, we will not be a soft target.
No, I think you're exactly right. And the people who think that that's unnecessary, what would you say to them? Just, you know.
I think wake up and join the real world. I mean,
yeah.
You know, my mother was a Holocaust survivor. My grandmother carried her as an infant to a concentration camp. Unbelievable,
oh,
miracle story. And so the Holocaust is something she's very aware of all growing up. And we have this phrase, you know, never again.
Yep.
Well, for about 80 years after the Holocaust, it was at least, unattractive or unfashionable for anti-Semites to spew their hatred, their racism out loud. That's over.
Yeah.
People feel perfectly comfortable saying online, in person, on TV, they hate Jews, they want Jews dead, they want Israel eliminated. It's incredible. You know,
yeah.
And my grandmother, my mom, they always said, yeah, it could happen in America too. And we're like, no, come on, not here, never here. Times have changed.
Are you shocked? I guess you're really not, but I'll ask it. You had written also something about Harvard fighting
yeah.
Trump on the reasonable conditions. Here you're an alum of Harvard, and at the time when you were attending, I'm sure it was probably just fine.
I never experienced any anti-Semitism there. And now when I hear what's been going on, I mean, October 7th was the worst, most deadly day for Jews since the Holocaust. And October 8th, in many ways, was even worse. All of a sudden, erupting around America, from the river to the sea, eliminate Israel before Israel had even begun its response. It's incredible to me how many, for lack of a better phrase, useful idiots
mm-hmm.
there are in America who just allow themselves to be manipulated and told that, yeah, the entire Middle East conflict can be reduced to white people are oppressing brown people, and therefore Israel is bad. It has nothing to do with that. Israelis are not white. The Palestinians are not brown. And the whole thing is fabricated. It's a lie. And anybody who's curious about the situation doesn't feel like they know enough, just start by looking at a map.
Yeah.
Israel is so tiny. It's such a tiny little sliver, the Jewish homeland, the only Jewish homeland. To say that there's no room for Israel in the massive Arab Muslim world, which is hundreds of millions of people and, you know, curvature of the earth size landmass.
Well, Israel could fit eight times in the state of California.
Yeah, it's
easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
I mean,
yeah.
That's just ludicrous.
Yeah.
That's the one small piece, and the opposition, I don't know what the landmass is of the opposition in scale, but eight Israels fit into the state of California? I mean, it's big, but not that big.
No, it's just nothing. You know, 8 million people surrounded by 500 million people. The whole population of Gaza, it's like if they would move, you know, 10, 20 miles away. End of problem. But no, that can't happen. And they just I mean, imagine if your neighbor came over and started shooting your children, and he was holding his child in front of him as a shield.
Right.
At the time that he's shooting at your kids. What, you're not going to shoot back to defend your kids? Of course you are. And then when his kid gets killed because he sacrificed him, right, the child sacrificing death cult. That's what's going on in Gaza.
Yep.
And so then when we fight back to protect our families, you know, we're the bad guys.
Right.
It's
or he paints a big or he paints a big red cross on his on the front of his house and pretends he's a hospital.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you almost kind of can't make that up. Like on your list in one of the emails I received, you said it was hilarious that Harvard would go to court to fight against the scholarly mission of the university, merit-based hiring and admissions, viewpoint diversity, and eradicating anti-Semitism and DEI bloat. I mean, that's a fairly concise list, and it does make them sound mentally ill.
Very good. You summed it up much more succinctly than I could.
I mean, it's
exactly
sad. It's really sad and kind of crazy. And it's fascinating to me that anyone would feel good about defending that. But it's interesting because even here, we're at the far end of the state from you. And they're having a protest. Let's see if I can pull this up. I thought, are you guys kidding? What the heck are you doing? They're having a protest here it is. It's a call to action. Now we're in a town with 90,000 people, so it's not a huge place. We're not incredibly diverse like a lot of places. So here, we deserve a call to action. We deserve a representative who puts people over profit, who fights for the voices of the community, not someone pushing a personal agenda. Show up and disrupt. We're protesting, and they're protesting one of the members of the Board of Supervisors. But it's fascinating to me because they're not just protesting. This is come in block, B-L-O-C. I guess that's a thing now. They call it black block. So B-L-A-C-K, like the color, and then B-L-O-C. It isn't just protection, it's power. Show up in black and mask up so we can demonstrate. Yeah, so we can resist as one united force. We keep us safe. Their writing is almost hard to read because it's just, it's illiterate. I have trouble with illiteracy. My degree was in English as well. It's painful. Actually, I'm like, whoever's organizing your writing, you need to fire them. We keep us safe through unity, solidarity, and action. By wearing all black and having a mask on your face.
Yeah.
And
they're proud about what they're doing, so let's mask up.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
If your cause is righteous, why are you masking up?
Exactly.
Yeah, show up and disrupt. We're protesting this guy's business. Is that they're going to be in front of his business to reject his leadership and ensure we are heard. Now, I'm sorry, but showing up with a mask and protesting someone's business doesn't make me, the business owner, want to go outside and say, oh, my gosh, are you having a problem? How can I help you? Like
you also read to me a lot of words. I still don't know what their position is.
Exactly.
What are they protesting?
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's
what are they protesting?
Yeah, it's a big zero. I'm not going to promote their thing, so I'm not going to. It's like every day, though. They're going to be there every day. So we deserve a rep who puts people over profit, who fights for the voices of the community. Well, you can't fight for a voice, but okay. Not someone pushing his personal agenda, and I'm like, he's one guy on a board of five people, right? So how much of a voice do you really have? Like one-fifth, actually. That would be the math part. God. It's terrifying. It's kind of interesting, though. It just worked out. You would think I did it on purpose. I wish I could say I did. But the second hour today, we have the terrorist therapist, Carol Lieberman. And so she's talking about, you know, all these protesters are terrorist pawns and open the floodgates to jihad in our streets. And I was like, huh, well, this is a nice little bookend we got going.
I mean, listen, they're very cynical, but very organized, well-funded, and they are executing a game plan that they put into place more than 30 years ago.
Yep.
They said, we are going to infect American academia with this narrative that, you know, Israel bad, Jews bad, and that's going to be an intersectionality, you know, with other minority causes. Never mind, there's no logic there, but if we put enough money into it, we can, and repeat the lie often enough, people will believe it, and the teachers will teach it. And it's happened.
Yep.
You know? These people, they got game. They're evil, but they got game. And we have to be aware of what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Dr. Charles Asher Small, I had the opportunity to meet him down at the consulate, the Israeli consulate in San Francisco a couple of years ago. And super, super nice man. But the one thing I walked away with in that meeting was he had said, as soon as you see the rise of anti-Semitism, you're looking at the end of a culture.
Just so.
And it was
just
like,
so.
And
that's a lesson from history.
Yep, and he was way ahead. It wasn't a couple of years. It's been longer ago than it was, way before any of these things happened. And at the time, I believed him because we've always had anti-Semitism, but it was unpopular, like you said. It was super unpopular.
It wasn't out in the open like it is now.
No. Now it's like just throw down. I mean, when we were kids, I mean, we were the Irish Catholic family that moved into the Jewish neighborhood, you know. And so they went to Christmas at our house. We went to, you know, Hanukkah at their house. It was fun. We had a great time. And now there's just, it's almost like there's just this massive cultural shift that has made it, I don't know, do you think it's actually culturally acceptable to be an anti-Semite now?
I think there's a few people who would like that to be the case, and they're loud and annoying, but I don't think they represent America at all. Sadly, a lot of the gatekeepers of culture in America, and I'm talking about the mainstream media, they are infected with anti-Semitism, but they don't represent America.
No.
How much time do we have? I'll share a story with you that I'm sure you'll appreciate, but how much time do we have?
Why don't you do that? Share the story, because we're going to take a late break because I'm having trouble typing. I'm having a little spaz attack at the end of my arms here, trying to send him the music I want to use.
but just quickly, you know, when our movie, when we finished cutting it, so it's got a rabbi with a gun, right? So we showed it to a big agent at an agency, you know, here in Hollywood. Jewish guy, completely not religious. And he says, great movie, really entertaining. You guys are going to make good money in streaming. I said, well, thank you, but I think it's a theatrical film. He says, yeah, but how many Jews are there really? New York, L.A., Florida? I said, well, it's an important part of our audience, but a much bigger part of our audience is conservatives, Christians, people who support Israel, and we're going to enjoy this movie. He says, what are you talking about? Those people hate Jews. It's like,
wow.
Have you ever met the people that you fly over between New York and L.A.? Because you are clueless. I mean, you know, I share Torah and authentic Jewish teachings and history with a big audience of 1 million followers on Facebook. Probably half, maybe a little more than half, are not Jewish. They tend to be conservative and Christian. And so I know this audience. I know them very well. And we tested the film, and we know that the film is going to do great with that audience. But the fact that a guy who's a tastemaker in Hollywood with, you know, some kind of power and say is that far off, that mistaken about who America is, you know, tells you everything you need to know about these cultural gatekeepers in America. They've lost the plot.
Yeah. Well, it's a very small percentage of America, like you said, but it's very much like the LGBTQ. QT XYZ crowd. I mean, it's like a 1% group of people that make all the noise, and it makes it look like it's the majority, and it's a tiny minority of people.
No, they're sucking up all the bandwidth.
Yeah.
Hey, so I found the songs. I went on a quest last night. I decided, you know what, Sal deserves some fun songs, not my usual 611 possible options. There must be more. And I found this group called 613.
They're great.
Oh, my gosh. They were amazing. They're kind of like the Jewish version of Pentatonix. All the everything is a cappella. So all the sounds you hear, none of them come from musical instruments. Only the people, these six guys, and the group name is spelled S-I-X, like the actual writing of the, you know, the actual spelling of the number, and then the number one and the number three. So S-I-X-1-3. You should look them up on YouTube. They are super talented and hilarious at the same time, actually, in some of their songs. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with our super fun guest, Sal Lipbeck. In just a couple seconds, you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I think it's going to be a long eight night to celebrate the festival of light, commemorate the miracle of oil, oh, yes, God's all. I'm a like a man. Like a man, I'm frying up this food of potato.
Stifel Nicholas, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month, starting at 8 a.m., for the Gorman Law Hour, featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Enjoy this encore presentation of We the People Radio.
We can never know what it's like. Only having oil left for just one night. Just a tiny light that shines so true. But then a miracle occurred. It burned for eight nights through. Don't you know that we're still standing each and every year? Cause the Jews are true survivors.
They have a whole montage. It's called Elton Johnica. I saw that. I'm like, this can't be real. yeah.
Those guys are great.
They are great. They just are really fun. They do a lot of touring, too. I mean, they're not just like some little one-off, you know, group. They've been around for a while, and they have a volume of music. Bill kept saying, that's got to be drums. They've got drums. I'm like, no, I researched. They've got nothing. It's just them. Yeah, really fun. So, Sal, go back to the baby thing, because I don't want people to be cheated out of the story that I didn't read, but I did link. So,
which story?
With Trump's whole proposal to have more babies. So I have your story linked, the baby blessing, 11 kids in 5 years, actually. That's what I called the show today.
very good. Very good. Yeah, no, that's a joke from the book, from Let My People Laugh, the greatest Jewish jokes of all time, bestseller on Amazon. But a rabbi is visiting a town. People are coming to see him to get a blessing. And so this woman says, you know, we've been married a few years. We haven't been able to have children. So the rabbi writes down the name of the woman and her husband. And he says, I'll put this note in the Western Wall, right? The holiest place on earth where people come to pray. And so we've been there. Everybody writes their prayer on a note and puts it in a crack in the wall there in Jerusalem. So he does that. 5 years later, he visits his town again. And he runs into the woman. He says, oh, how's it going? And she says, oh, Rabbi, fantastic. And he says, have you been able to have a baby? She says, Rabbi, we have 11 kids. He says, 11 kids? She says, yeah, after you're here, give us a blessing. Well, 9 months later, we had twins. And then we had twins again. And then we had another child. And then we had triplets. And then we had twins again. And he says, wow, that's incredible. And tell me, what's going on with your husband? And she says, well, he's in Israel right now. Really? What's he doing there? He's at the wall looking for that note.
I was like, yeah, that's... Gotta be careful what you wish for. So, yeah, maybe you need to shoot that over to the White House next time President Trump goes to Israel.
Of course we can laugh, but it is very true that when a population cannot replace itself,
yep,
that's a sign that a civilization is dying. I read a really interesting book by this guy, David Goldman, about how civilizations die, and it's that. And if you look back in time, you know, late stage Rome, other empires, it's like the ruling class gets soft, and they're more interested in their own material comfort than in raising families and transmitting their values. And then they become vulnerable to other civilizations, other, you know, nations that are more focused on the future. I mean, in Europe, forget about it. They're not anywhere near replacement. And just in order to have young people around to do the jobs, they invited in this huge wave of immigration. Now they're having huge problems over there, needless to say. And, one of the few places in the world where you've got a population reproducing itself handily is Israel. I think they're like at over three, fertility rates, you know, how many kids people are having.
Right.
And you've got to be, and China, they're also, they have not been replacing themselves. And then too late, they start to realize, wait a minute, this wasn't such a good idea. We drank the Kool-Aid on overpopulation, but we're not anywhere near overpopulation. Nations need to have a next generation. And when they do, when they start focusing on, well, what kind of a world am I going to hand to my kids, their values are very different. These people who are not getting married, not having kids, not thinking about the future, their priorities are not what America needs. And I think people are starting to understand that.
Yeah, and the whole idea that, well, we can just import all of the workers, I mean, that just... Your point is well taken. It has not worked out well.
You're not importing our culture, you know, and so
exactly.
you end up being somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm all for legal immigration.
Of course.
And when you have legal immigration, it's done in a measured way that makes sense for that country, because you're thinking about, okay, what are the priorities of this country? Who do we need? Who's going to be good for the country? But when it's being done illegally, and laws aren't being enforced, and you have no idea who's coming over the border. And those millions of people who came across over the last 4 years before this administration, we don't know who they are. We don't know where they are. But I think we can be sure that some very bad actors came along with the people who were just... It's not all people just seeking jobs. There were some bad people mixed in there.
Oh, sure.
And I hope to God they don't, you know, kill more Americans, but it's... That's something we all need to be praying for.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is when you bring people in and there are no, you know, my thing is always, if it doesn't work with kids and dogs, it isn't going to work anywhere else either. And with kids and dogs, you know, you have no rules, nothing good happens. You don't get good kids or good dogs. You have to have framework and rules. And a process.
If you love them, you have framework and rules. It's for their good that you have framework and rules. Of course.
Yeah. The idea that we just, you know, throw the doors open and everybody just comes running in and gets to do whatever they want.
Yeah, our immigration system worked for many, many, many years, but there was a screening process, and we brought in the best, the brightest, and the immigrants that came in had to be able to provide for themselves, had to have a skill, had to be healthy. We did none of that in the last few years. I mean, there were people coming across with diseases and no job skills, couldn't speak the language. I mean, and it's all coming back to roost right now. Look what we have. I mean, we've got a mess right now we're trying to clean up. How do you go about doing that without looking like an ogre, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the real kicker, because then you're mean, right?
You want to hear another joke?
Yes, please.
A little bit relevant, but we'll definitely make people laugh.
Yes, love your relevant jokes. If you haven't noticed,
in my book, the jokes are all numbered because, you know, sometimes you need the greatest joke for a toast at a wedding or for a lunch with business or a golf outing. You know, depending on the situation, you need a different kind of joke. And so I have lists at the front, you know, greatest jokes for those situations.
Oh.
So this is joke number 73 in the book. Right? And it says, back in the days when millions of Jews lived in the villages of Poland and Ukraine, a young Torah scholar was soon to be married. And he heard about an old couple who never had a fight in 60 years of marriage. And he was eager to learn their secret. So he walked for days to hear the husband's story. Finally met him, the old man says, the day after we married, I went to my in-law's house with a donkey cart, and I loaded all of my wife's possessions into it. We set out for the new home. After a couple hours of walking, the donkey suddenly stopped. My wife walked around in front of the donkey, looked him in the eye, and said, that's one. An hour later, the donkey took another unauthorized break. My wife said, that's two. An hour after that, the donkey stopped again, and he wouldn't budge. My wife walked around in front of the donkey and said, that's three. And then she pulled out a gun and shot the donkey dead. And I said to her, don't you think that's a little excessive? And she said, that's one.
Yeah, that's probably true, too. See, you have to have rules. Clear, concise rules, and you've got to set a good example. Oh my gosh! Well, so what are you seeing on the film side of it? I know you had mentioned a little bit that, you know, they were a little bit stupid about whether or not like Guns N' Roses would be popular, or is that what they were thinking? It wouldn't be popular, or just wouldn't get the view? You know,
this moron thought that non-Jews would not enjoy a great action thriller about a man of faith who stands up for his community when his community is attacked. Now, listen, the movie has to be entertaining, but we know it is. I mean, we tested it in front of audiences. People love it. Before we made this thriller, I took myself back to film school. My wife and I set up a projector and a screen in our living room, and we watched a thriller a day.
Oh, no kidding.
Years. Like, we just studied the thriller genre, and we said we were just determined to deliver a really exciting action-packed movie, and we did that. And the fact that the man of the cloth is a rabbi, I mean, that makes it particular. I know a lot about this world, and I'm able to make him a very distinct character. But of course, it's universal. I mean, you know, people of faith have more in common with each other very often. Even if they're different faiths than they have with people from maybe their own background, but, you know, who are militantly secularist. And there's a lot of people like that in the culture, sadly. But, you know, we can all identify with a man who's called to stand up for his community when the community's in danger.
Yeah, and, there are all sorts of things like that. I mean, even if you go back to the series MASH, you know, you had Father Mulcahy, There he was in the middle of a war, you know. That's not a not a new idea, but I'm curious, when did you start this project? Was it before or after the October 7th?
It was before. It was before. We actually shot the movie at the end of 2022. Now, we knew, sadly, that a movie about Jews under attack who fight back would always be relevant.
Yeah, that's true.
And what was actually, when we, you know, we have this large audience who's interested in what we share about Jewish wisdom, Jewish content. So we knew it was going to be a Jewish movie. And it was going to be a thriller. We weren't sure exactly what it was going to be. And then there was a terrible tragedy, a shooting in Poway, California, a young white nationalist who had been radicalized online, and who knows if he ever met a Jew, walked into a Chabad synagogue at the eighth day, the last day of Passover, killed a woman, Lori Gilbert Kay, shot the rabbi, shot his fingers off, and would have killed a lot more people if his gun had not miraculously jammed, and then the congregants chased him out. And I actually drove down the next day. I attended the funeral. I interviewed the rabbi. I watched him become a national figure. And doing something that the rabbi in Guns N' Moses does, and it's such a Jewish response. You know, when there's a tragedy, what we learn from our sages, from our history, is to make something meaningful come out of that tragedy, to call on people to do acts of kindness, acts of charity, acts of righteousness in the name of the departed, of the victim, of the dead one, and to make some good happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise. You know, it doesn't restore the dead person to their family, but at least it adds some kind of meaning to the tragedy. And the rabbi did that and was very inspired by that. And so that was part of the genesis of the project.
Wow. Well, your timing obviously was excellent. We have to take a really quick break. I'm actually not as far behind as I thought. I hope people go to the website. I've got all this stuff linked. I've got your site linked and all the different projects. But when do we eat? We should talk about that a little bit when we come back, because the little subheader is sex, drugs, and matzo ball soup. I'm like, and the picture is hilarious. So anyway, I just thought that was pretty funny. So we found our friends at Six with 613 did one on Seder. So thought we'd bookend this part with Seder. And when we come back, maybe you can tell people what Seder is for those who do not know. Our guest,
delighted.
Yes, our guest today is Salvador. Goes by Sal, though. We should just keep calling him Sal. Sal Litvak. So he's now our pal, Sal. Nobody else's pal. We've got him today. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I clean the house and got rid of the hummus. Now the Seder's where I go. Me and my fam at the table eating matzo like the Hebrews long ago. So come over, we start Passover Seder by blessing the wine, and we wash in our hands, and we grab the parsley, dip it in the salt water, and break the middle matzo in half.
And now it's singing like, girl, you know I want matzo. Matzo was handmade by my father before me. I'm thanking God that we were free, let out of slavery in Mitzrayim. Say, boys, now we'll drink four cups, stuff all the place, and go on with the magid. Thanking God that we were free, thanking God that we were free.
Need help with your health insurance? We've got you covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares. Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
Kick off your Monday with our county's key stories. Tune in to KCNR at 6:35 a.m. for the Town Hall Brief during the Sue McClain News Hour. Known for its unbiased reporting, the Town Hall Brief offers crisp, local-only updates and lively discussions that matter to the community. Have a tip? Email townhallbriefs@gmail.com or connect via socials at townhallbrief on linktree.com to send a message. The Town Hall Brief, the trusted source for Shasta County News, Monday mornings at 6:35 on KCNR.
Need help with your health insurance? We've got you covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares.
This is an encore presentation of We the People.
Questions again before the meal can begin and eat the matzah for Father's Day. They had to leave swiftly, no time to eat. Now we've got unleavened bread on the plate. Take a bite of the marah so we remember the horrors of our lives as the Egyptians played. And for roast it to that, we put our matzah and then eat hilal sandwich, then shulchan hooray.
And we're singing like, girl, you know I want matzah. Matzah was handmade by my papi for me. Thanking God that we were freed, let out of slavery, Mitzrayim.
Pretty tricky that you can have a song about all that. They just did such a good job. Okay, so Seder. Give people the elevator speech on Seder. How about that?
So Seder is a holiday meal that we enjoy once a year when we celebrate Passover. Truly, we commemorate God rescuing us from slavery in Egypt, right? With signs and wonders, with 10 miracles known as the plagues. God pulled our people out of slavery in Egypt. And then that becomes the setting for the oldest joke known to mankind, right? It's Exodus 14:11. So you can just hear a Jewish guy from Brooklyn saying, right, we've left Egypt. Everybody should be absolutely fine, right? God performed 10 miracles that we would leave Egypt. But now our backs are to the sea and the most powerful army in the world is coming after us, to kill us. And the guy turns to Moses and says, what'd you do to us? There weren't enough graves in Egypt. You had to bring us out here to die in the desert.
Yeah.
And then, of course, God parts the sea and we make it through. And that happens at Passover. So that's what we're commemorating. And we gather with our families and we tell the story of the redemption from slavery in Egypt, and we eat some special foods, including this yeast-free bread known as matzah. It doesn't always taste so good, but it is the bread that commemorates that event in history.
I remember going to all of those events. We were really lucky as kids to live in a place where, I remember as a little kid, we, go to sleep over at somebody's house, and we all had basements because it was in the East, and, we all had our sleeping bags, we're all laying in the basement, a bunch of little, 9-10-year-old girls, and it's like, well, who do you guys think Jesus was? Oh, we think he's a great prophet. Really? So, we had, all these discussions about what it was like to be Jewish, what it was like to be Catholic, because nobody was... Like, the idea of being Christian, that wasn't one of the choices. You're either Catholic or Jewish. You picked a team there. And everyone was on a team. Actually, there was nobody who said, I don't know, we don't go to either. That wasn't even a choice. But it was fascinating.
Yeah.
It was just fascinating, though, because none of us ever considered your side is wrong. Like, the way you do it is wrong. We were just interested. We were all interested, and so they did things that had borscht. I'm a big beaten over, and I was like, "Are you kidding me? You have a whole thing made out of just beets? We were having goulash at our house, right? went to the neighbors for all the exciting food. But
goulash is my favorite food. My grandmother made such an amazing goulash, authentic Hungarian goulash.
See? It's interesting. There's a whole cultural world out there that all these goofy people are completely missing, just out of hand. They're dismissing it out of hand. These guys are bad. The other guys are good. And a lot of that is not rooted in history, as we mentioned earlier. And I just was adding to the page for today, just in case I air this again, it's May 4th, 2025. But I added the show from October of 2024, former CIA officer Claire Lopez. And we did a whole 2 hours on the myth of Palestine and the two-state solution. And from a national security perspective, Claire just burns that one in, you know, to the ground. It's fantastic. So if you still think Palestine is a state and Palestinians are a culture or whatever, yeah, that's why that joke is always so good. The meme, the big white room with nothing in it, and it's labeled the Museum of Palestinian History.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, there are Arabs, you know, and it's a wonderful old culture, a lot of tradition. And there were Arabs and Jews, you know, living in the Holy Land. There weren't a lot. You know, it was really a desert. It had become a totally barren place. Mark Twain famously toured it in the 1800s. He was like, yeah, there's not many people here. This is just a wasteland. But there were always some Jews in Jerusalem. There were always people in Jerusalem throughout all time. And then there was a modern desire to have a Jewish state, particularly, I mean, it started in the late 1800s, Zionism was created, and eventually the British, who won World War One, and so it went from the Ottoman Empire to a British mandate, and then there were Jews and Arabs, and they were fighting with each other because more people were coming, and what really happened was Jews decided we need to have a place of our own, we're going to just move to the Holy Land, hopefully it'll become a state. And they started farming the land using modern methods that hadn't been used before. And they brought this wasteland back to life. And as the farms started succeeding and as the towns and cities started growing, and there was work. And then people, just like in California, people came because there was economic opportunity. And then a lot of non-Jews came also. And they, from that region, they were Arabs. But they came because the Jews were there. You know, and then you started kind of growing these two populations side by side. But what's so interesting is that, you know, if you look, I don't know much. I'm not no kind of expert on Arab and Muslim culture. But I once participated in a fascinating panel called Sons of Abraham, where we've got three dads, a Muslim dad, a Jewish dad, and a Christian dad. So just comparing our experiences. The Muslim dad asked us to read this book about Muhammad, a biography compiled from the earliest sources by an Oxford professor who had converted to Islam. So I mean, it could not be more fair and generous to Muhammad and, you know, really the history the way Muslims see it. But what's interesting is that he grew up in a place where feud and war of honor, you know, that never, like, there's a stain on your honor, it never goes away. So you can never let that go, even if it takes two, three, four generations to get the vengeance, you can never let it go that there's a stain on your honor. Muhammad had to fight many times just to create his religion. And so, you know, war is a little bit of a part of the Quran and the way that it's developed. And this idea of conversion by the sword is real. But the main thing is there's this concept of Dar al-Islam, the House of Islam. And if a region of the world gets conquered and becomes part of the House of Islam, and then later gets reconquered by the non-Muslims, so that's a stain on the honor, and they can't let it go. And that's really what's happened. The fact that Israel was created really in the center of that Arab-Muslim world, you know, for some people, obviously not for all, but for some people in that world, it's an unbearable stain on the honor. And so it doesn't matter what land you offer and what concessions to peace you want to make. It's the existence of Israel that is the problem for those people. And so when the original offer was made, the two-state solution, that, you know, we're going to create two countries for you. This is Britain talking. So the two-state solution is called Israel and Jordan. And it was going to be 50-50. And they're like, no way, we will not accept that. So they made Jordan 80% and Israel 20% of that landmass. I'm like, okay, but the Jews only get one-fifth. Perfect. Now you can, guys can both have your country. And they're like, okay, we'll take Jordan, but Israel can't exist. kept that up ever since. And, you know, people should just do their own research and look at the history, but that's a pretty succinct and accurate summary.
Yeah. Yeah, Claire, Claire did a really nice job on that with the history and the political underpinnings of that and how that, quote, two-state solution has been tried a couple of times and obviously failed both because of exactly what you just outlined. There's no real interest in that. It sounds good, but there's no acceptance that the Jewish homeland can be a thing.
Right. Yeah. Americans just can't understand because they're like, well, no, but everybody wants peace. So
right.
Obviously both sides want peace. So if there's a war going on, it must be because it's our fault.
Right.
No. We keep offering the country. We've offered it many times. And in that world, in that part of the world, what they respect is strength. You know, so we have to be strong.
Yeah, you have to work with what you have. And I think that that part has been just impressive that nobody's, we also did another show with the same lady. We called it Operation Beeper, which was probably kind of mean-spirited, but it was about the pager, the operation that the Mossad did with the pagers.
And Operation Grim Beeper.
Grim Beeper, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that, Grim Beeper. And, yeah, these guys take security seriously. When I went to the consulate down there, I had the address. I was supposed to go there. Like, it wasn't like I was wandering along and just happened on in. I was going there on purpose. And I have to tell you, it was incredibly difficult to find. It was almost like the hidden door. And then once you got in, it was like, oh, and you weren't in once you were in. Then you had to go in some more, and then you went in some more. And it was almost like the Panama Canal, but in a building. We were accosted by drug addicts and homeless people, and it was like, can we go back in the building? Like, we had to ride on BART. Terrifying. But it isn't something, you know, people think there's no pressure. But I think even in L.A., obviously, you said you're encouraging people in your community to learn to defend themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unfortunate that has to be done, but you'd be kind of a dummy if you didn't. I mean, honestly. So,
you know.
Tell us something funny, Sal. Let's end on something funny, because I got Bohemian Hanukkah queued up here.
Number 613.
Yes.
Okay, here's one your audience might like. This is joke number 63. So let my people laugh. Greatest Jewish jokes of all time. Bestseller on Amazon. So a fleeing Taliban terrorist, desperate for water, is trudging through the desert when he sees something in the distance. Praying that it isn't a mirage, he hurries toward the object only to find a little old Jew selling ties from a rack. And the terrorist flirts, "Give me water." "Sorry, no water. Would you like to buy a tie? They're only $5. "Infidel, I don't need a Western adornment. I spit on your ties. I need water." "Sorry, no water, just ties, but they're pure silk and only $5. "A curse on your ties. I'd twist one around your neck and choke you, but I need strength to find water." "No, so you don't want to buy a tie from me, and you hate me, and you call me infidel, and you threaten my life. But I fear only God, so I will tell you that if you go west over that hill for about 2 miles, you'll find a restaurant. They serve fine food and all the ice-cold water you can drink. Go in peace." Grumbling, another cursed and desperate terrorist staggers west over the hill. Hours later, he crawls back nearly dead, and he gasps, "They wouldn't let me in without a tie."
On that note, we have to unfortunately say goodbye to our guest. Oh, Sal, it's been terrific. Thank you so much. We hope your movie is a huge success.
Thank you.
And I hope people go and check all this out. Guns N' Moses coming out this summer. Our guest has been Sal Litvak. We'll be right back.
Thank you so much.
With the terrorist therapist. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Is this the AIDS night? We light with family. Recall with great pride our escape from great tyranny. Kindle the light. Remember the Maccabees.
How did those five boys lead us to...
K243 CT Reading.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. A number of people have been shot and wounded today in an incident at a Kentucky church after the suspect shot and wounded a state trooper. After shooting the officer, the suspect ended up at Richmond Road Baptist Church, where a number of people have been hit. Kentucky State Police say the suspect was killed. The trooper and several people have been hospitalized. Senate version of the fiscal 2026 defense policy bill would authorize an additional $32 billion for national security spending above what the Pentagon sought, putting the chamber on a possible collision course with the House and the Trump administration. Retired Admiral Mark Montgomery.
As a result of this, the base budget stayed around $838 billion, plus there's like $34 billion or so in, or $848 billion, and then there's about $34 billion in Department of Energy, this nuclear weapons, for a total defense budget of around $880 billion. Hugh, that's about 2.9% of GDP. Now, you add in the 157, it gets you up to 3.3.
Also at townhall.com, officials in Central Texas had to pause the search for flood victims because of very heavy rain earlier in the morning. They're hoping now to get that search effort back underway soon. No official word on when that may happen. In the meantime, a Christian witness and local carpenter combined their efforts to raise a cross at the site of the tragedy. Correspondent Haya Panwami says the cross was constructed by cabinet maker Bill Hardy, who reached out from his own experience following a personal loss a number of years ago. Officials say leaving now 160 people still missing, the death count now 129. More on these stories, townhall.com.
We all know the importance of good daily habits, whether it's getting outside, getting your steps in, stretching those limbs, or eating right. Doing it on the regular is key. That's why if you're dealing with everyday aches and pains, it's time to bring Relief Factor into your life. Head over to ReliefFactor.com or give them a call at 800-4-RELIEF and get their 3-week quick start for just $19.95. Relief Factor is the daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by a team of doctors, it uses a special formula of 4 natural ingredients. Relief Factor doesn't just mask the pain, it helps reduce or eliminate it. In fact, the longer you take Relief Factor, the more effective it is to get your days going without any pain. See if we can get you out of pain by taking their 3-week quick start. It's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Simply call 800-4-RELIEF. 800, the number 4-RELIEF. Wherever you're having pain, neck, shoulders, hips, knees, don't let it keep you from living the life you want to live. Make Relief Factor part of your daily routine. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800, the number 4-RELIEF.
1 year ago today in Butler, Pennsylvania, then candidate Trump was wounded in that assassination attempt. How much has he changed from the experience? Well, experts say no one survives a close call of death without some change, some good, sometimes not so good. Correspondent George Williams takes a closer look at Mr. Trump and the events that shaped his life that day.
According to close observers, Mr. Trump is much the same, but they also see signs his brush with death did change him in some ways. He is on higher alert on stage, such as in Iowa earlier this month when he commented on nearby fireworks saying, "Did I hear what I think I heard?" But there are other sensitivities. It said he's more attentive and more grateful and speaks openly about how he believes he was saved by God to save the country and serve a second term, making him even more resolved to achieve his promised agenda. George Williams, Washington.
Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. The President's Department of Government Efficiency has spawned state-level DOGE initiatives as GOP governors and lawmakers aim to show that they are in step.
Critics say some of these initiatives are nothing new or duplicative. However, some governors are using their DOGE vehicles to target welfare programs or diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The state initiatives have a markedly different character than President Trump's slash-and-burn approach. Steve Slavinsky of the Libertarian Cato Institute says much of what he's seen is the same mundane stuff that states do routinely to save money.
That is Washington correspondent Andrew Stewart reporting. In the meantime, analysts at the Pro-Labor Economic Policy Institute say some governors, as well as lawmakers, are apparently using DOGE agendas to consolidate power. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Enjoy this encore presentation of We the People Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second half of We the People Radio on May 4th, 2025. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And we are just fresh off an hour with Salvador Litvak. He's a comedian, but he was a serious guy. We talked about a lot of serious stuff. Wrote a book called Let My People Laugh, and he has a film coming out, Guns and Moses. So if you missed the first hour, go to the archive at wethepeopleradio.us. It's all on there. Our guest this hour, so interesting that they both wound up on the same day too, is Dr. Carol Lieberman. She is the author of Lions, Tigers, and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror, at Schools, Cafes, Hospitals, Bookstores, Helping Families Cope with Terrorism. It won the Paris, at the Paris Book Festival. She is an MD and an MPH, Master of Something or Other. I don't know what that means exactly. She's going to tell us. She is known worldwide as America's psychiatrist. She is the host of Dr. Carol's Couch on VoiceAmerica.com. That's fun. And the Terrorist Therapist podcast. Say that five times fast. She is a forensic psychiatrist, expert witness, best-selling, award-winning author of four books, two on terrorism, two on relationships. And I'm not even going to go on with the rest of it because I want her to talk to us some more. Protesters are terrorist pawns and open floodgates to jihad in our streets. That was the article they sent me, and I'm like, I don't know who she is, but I need to get her on here. So, Dr. Carol, Dr. Lieberman, I don't know what we call you, and what is an MPH, by the way?
Yes, it's a Master's of Public Health.
Ah, public health, darn it. I got all pleased with myself. I got the MD part. I got the terrorist therapist, and I didn't bungle that. And then it was like MPH. What the heck's an MPH? Miles per hour. That was the first thing that went through my head, obviously. Obviously, I was kind of screwed at that point.
Yes. After I got my MD, I then later on got a master's in public health because I'm interested in helping people, not just people in my office, you know, who I treat as a psychiatrist, but helping people in general with health, with psychiatric health, psychological health, and health, like during COVID, for example. I did a health campaign on what people can do to stay healthy during COVID other than taking the vaccine.
Yeah, alternate ideas, like the part where you stay alive.
Right.
That's turned out to be, that's turned out all of us who were branded as, heretics and kooks and conspiracy theorists. Kind of turns out we weren't all that dumb after all.
That's right.
Well, we spoke with Sal, because he is a Harvard alum, and so part of his, you know, history, it was like, what has happened to my school, you know, with all these crazy protests? And your article was really quite good. The deportation of the you know, what's his face, and your quote here, how sad that students at Ivy League colleges are the biggest dupes of terrorists and leftists. Figure that's a fairly decent jumping off point for you.
Yes. And, you know, I went to Harvard, too, for one summer taking organic chem. So I have some you know, connections, some sad connections. And my daughter went to Barnard, you know, which is part of Columbia.
Yeah. And they've gone crazy, too.
And they are crazy, too, yes. And then, actually, you know, where I got my MPH and where I was on the clinical faculty was UCLA. And UCLA is crazy, too. You don't hear as much about UCLA as you do about, you know, Harvard and Columbia and so on. But they, UCLA was even crazier. So, you know, all of this is just, it is so hard to believe that this is happening in America, that the schools, Ivy League or not, you know, there are schools that aren't Ivy League that also are allowing these protesters to run rampant on their campus and to allow them to... do all kinds of things to Jewish students, whether not just verbally, but physically as well, keeping them out of the library, keeping them out, you know, doing all these, everything they can do, and they have been getting away with it. And so, so it is a huge problem, and it's just shocking that this has been allowed to go on so as long as it has. And Trump, you know, is trying to stop it. I mean, you know, if you think about the three presidents of the colleges that were at the congressional hearing, you know, Harvard and let's see, I'm trying to remember, University of Pennsylvania and MIT, and they were asked, why are you allowing this and so on, and you know what they're pretending, what they pretended then and what they're pretending ever since. Is that it's because of the First Amendment. But, you know, the First Amendment doesn't say that you can trespass or you can be violent or you can provoke people to commit hate crimes. None of that is protected in the First Amendment. And so it's just hiding, pretending that they don't know better. And really, they, you know, one would hope that they do as presidents of these colleges. And it's still going on. And so now it's not just that, it's not just these, well, so what Trump is trying to do, you know, which was really clever and really took a lot of courage and so on, but I wrote a thing months ago about the things that you need to do to stop this. And, of course, one of the things was sending home the people with green cards, the student visas and so on, who were involved in these protests. And, but, you know, they're taking them even beyond the schools because of the fact that they are, you know, that something is being done to try to stop them at the schools. So now the protesters are going other places. Like you might know, they went to, Trump Tower, for example. They were protesting there. They were protesting in Manhattan, in the streets in Manhattan, in Times Square. And then they also protested at the ICE building in Washington, D.C. So, it's, you know, even taking them off the college campuses isn't going to be stopping them altogether. And the latest thing that they have been protesting about, you know, they just find individual people or, you know, individual reasons, the reason du jour, and then they protest about it. And so Mahmoud Khalil was one of the latest ones that they're protesting his deportation. And, you know, it's just pretty outrageous. I mean, not only is it shocking that there is all this anti-Semitism being allowed to happen in America, but also, you know, that colleges, I mean, some of the best colleges, where you would think that they would be smart enough to not allow these kinds of things to happen, are allowing them to happen. And even like with the latest thing being that since Harvard, Harvard is just an example, and maybe it's one of the worst examples, but it's certainly not alone. But you know, Harvard, you know, not having kowtowed not having given in to Trump for taking away their money, now he is having to change their tax status, you know, because I guess they figured out how they could get more money from their donors and so on. But, I mean, do you realize how they're missing the whole point? I mean, they're ignoring the whole point. The point isn't that they can get money elsewhere. The point is that they shouldn't be allowing all of this anti-Semitism to happen on their campus.
Yeah, no, you would think that would be obvious.
Yeah, and I think if you go to a foreign country and you get a green card, you're a guest. And you should abide by their rules, and if you do protest, particularly a government protest, I don't think you get to do that. You know, you don't go to somebody's house as a guest and create havoc and not get asked to leave. And I don't understand why that is so hard for people to wrap their minds around, that you don't get to come here as a guest and then
The part you left out was they broke in. They weren't really a guest. They were uninvited.
Well,
in a lot of cases.
Yeah, but some of them do have green cards.
That's true.
So they're allowed to come in and study and work and so forth. But I don't think you get to protest the government that gave you the ability to come here and get an education. And
nothing happens,
and have no consequences. So I don't know. What do you say to that?
Well, of course, I totally agree. Yes, and there are varying, you know, the people who are protesting on these college campuses and off the campus too, in these places like I mentioned, Trump Tower and Times Square and Washington D.C. It's a mixture of people. Some of them are the students at the schools. Some of them are paid by people like George Soros to participate in the protest, and they may not be students at the school. Some of them are even older than college students. And some of them have green cards, and some of them don't. And so it's a whole mixture.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it should have been, the real problem is, but it should have been stopped from day one.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of, now that it's gone on, they sort of feel entitled.
Right.
This is part of school, you know, to spend time in the courtyard protesting. And it's, so it's really,
well,
it
and
really
the tents and
stopped.
The, like, the just the grunge campouts on, you know, on the campus. So it's not even like they're marching around protesting, but then there's these weird encampments, and there's all sorts of heinousness that goes on with that whole situation. We didn't get to ask Sal, who did graduate Harvard Law. He would have been the guy to ask, and I got distracted. I wanted to know, isn't there a rule against protesting with masks on? Didn't we do that?
Well,
isn't that a thing?
Well, I don't know if there was, but that has been one of the things that Trump has been trying to institute. I don't know, you know, how far back that goes, but I know recently there has an attempt has been made to make that part of it, that people aren't allowed to protest with masks. That is one of the ways to decrease this or discourage people from participating, because if they have masks, they can't be, even though they're on video and they're on photographs and so on. If they're in a mask, it's harder to find out who they are, and that was part of what they were doing.
Well, it also may not mess up your career opportunities in the future.
Right.
As a psychiatrist, because so we missed our opportunity to ask the lawyer about the laws about protesting with masks, but I don't want to blow it and miss the psychiatrist who could talk to us about why people protest with masks on. What's going on there?
It's a combination of what we were just talking about, not wanting to be identified.
Right.
And then also, it's kind of like, psychologically, it's like being a bad man, like in the West.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think about that.
The bad men with the guns, you know, the outlaws, they would wear a mask.
That's
so
true.
It makes them feel more of an outlaw.
I apparently have never protested with a mask on. Or maybe I just didn't want to be an outlaw, or maybe I really was one and I don't need to act that out now. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of interesting that they show up at these protests and they want to have a voice, but they don't want to be identified. That kind of counters the whole thing. I mean, if you have something important to say, say it and have a conversation about it, but don't hide your face when you say it.
I think it's called own it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Own your message.
Now, it's so interesting. Well, there's a lot of interesting parts, but a lot of, you know, it's horrible stuff. Most of these college protesters were not around, were not alive yet, were not born yet on 9/11. And
yes.
So it's really ironic that, like in Manhattan, for example, the very streets that they are protesting on, with or without masks, on 9/11, they would have been covered with ash and smoke and all of that. But because they weren't born yet, most of them, they don't have that feeling in their gut, in their heart, what it felt like on 9/11. And so this is all fun and games for them, you know, because they didn't have that shock and that terror and all of that. And so they don't get how serious this is. And plus, they don't get how these very protesters, green card or not, I mean, for as long as they stay in America, they are at risk of terrorists. They don't get how terrorists want to kill Americans, want to kill not just Americans, want to kill anybody, anywhere, who are infidels, who don't believe in their Quran. And so, you know, the very people who, especially like, you know, when Netanyahu came here and he spoke to Congress, he talked about, he gave us an example, the Gays for Gaza protesters.
Yeah.
And he said Gays for Gaza are like chickens for KFC.
Yeah.
Because, you know, terrorists, Gaza and elsewhere, terrorists don't believe in and are very against any kind of LGBTQ plus. And so if they were in, if a terrorist came here and saw them and saw that they were gay and so on, well, it would be harder to do it here, but if they were in the Middle East, they'd throw them off the roof. And so it's so absurd to be protesting for somebody who wants to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. That just, it seems, it's hard to explain, actually. I think only through psychiatry can we truly know. We have to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Carol Lieberman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find this later, commercial-free and free to listen to at wethepeopleradio.us.
I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane. Nobody knows if it's something to bless our place. So far I ain't found a rhyme or a reason to change. I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane.
Hi. This is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
As we all get older, the one constant thing is the aggressive, excessive mail and advertising for Medicare, Medicare supplements, and Medicare Advantage. And almost every one of them is a call center with no idea of what you really need. Siskiyou Insurance has an agent that deals with nothing but Medicare issues and can explain the differences clearly between a Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage. Call Greg Green at Siskiyou Insurance at 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Enjoy this encore presentation of We the People Radio.
Who is it?
I'd like to say that I don't have very many songs about craziness, but I really do. We're going to trot them all out for you today. So if you had a, I don't know, I mean, let's say you had somebody's parents who came to you who said, look, my kids are like in the grips of this crazy death cult that thinks that, you know, they should waste their education protesting for people who hate them. What do you tell these people?
Yes, it's difficult. You know, there's all this peer pressure for one thing. You know, it's a whole variety. I mean, if some of the students, I mean, first of course, it depends if it's a Jewish student, parents of a Jewish student, or a non-Jewish student, although certainly there are lots of non-Jewish students who are also terrified and sympathetic to what's going on, not anti-Semitic. There are various choices. One thing is, depending upon the college that your student was accepted into, if they haven't gone yet, some parents, some families have chosen to take a gap year in the hopes that by waiting a year, it won't be as bad by the next year. Now, you know,
how's that worked out?
Well, yeah, it's kind of questionable. I think it's different depending upon what school it is. But that was one solution. Another is to just have their kids, if they're Jewish, join. Like there are Hillel organizations on a lot of college campuses, and that helps to give community support or group support, you know, to the Jewish students. Then, you know, some people have changed schools. There are some schools that are more affected by this than others. You know, those are, and then, you know, then there's also the choice of just hunkering down, just getting through it, you know, just, you know, trying to ignore what's going on around you. None of these solutions are great. But, you know, the thing is that, that it is an opportunity for some families to, help their child get more knowledgeable about their religion. You know, if it's a child, a college student who hasn't really gotten much of a Jewish education, and therefore just feels like, you know, why is it worth it? I mean, why am I undergoing all of this? You know, just because is it worth it to be a Jew, kind of thing? And really, most Jewish college students do believe that it is. But for those, I mean, this is a time to sort of make one more proud of religion, of the Jewish religion. I mean, you know, of course, the truth is that all of this starts at home. I mean, the worst part of it is that there are some Jewish students or Jewish families, and more Jewish students, who because of peer pressure or whatever, there are some Jewish students in these encampments, you know, on the lawns of the colleges. And that of course is incredibly disappointing. And it has to do with parents, not giving their children from the time that they're super young, you know, from the time that they go to regular school. There are, in most synagogues, there are temple schools, you know, there are schools on the weekend for kids, to learn Hebrew or just to learn about the history of the Jews, all of that. I mean, I was born and bred in New York, and I went to a temple school from the time that I was, I don't know, five or something. And I got, it was a conservative temple, so I got confirmed, not bas mitzvah. But now I live in California, and I sent my daughter to school, temple school, from the time, you know, I think they started even earlier, and she was bas mitzvah. And then I went to Israel to have her be bas mitzvah in Israel. So it really has to do with how much Jewish parents inculcate their children with pride in their religion, with the beauty of it and all of that. If you don't do that, by the time they're in college, it's a little late.
Yeah. Well, and for all of the other people, you know, it's interesting to me that the protesting tribe is the one that flies under the banner of tolerance.
Yeah.
I mean, that irony I don't think is lost on anyone.
Yes. I mean, you know, and in part, for some of the people, besides the ones who are paid to be in the protests or who have green cards, you know, come from the Middle East, besides that, there are people who have been taught even earlier in school. They've been taught that there are only two kinds of people in the world. There are the oppressors and the oppressed. And so they identify with the oppressed, and so they think that the people in Gaza are oppressed, and therefore Israel is horrible because they're the oppressors, and then they extend it to Jews in general are oppressors. That's what they learn when they're really young in some of our schools,
mm-hmm.
our public schools. And so it's really... And that's another thing. I'm really glad that Trump is trying to change things around, to sort of look into our public school education system. But I wanted to mention also that I was starting to say about how they weren't born during 9/11, and also part of the problem is that they were born a little after 9/11. All kids who were born after 9/11 grew up with parents who had been terribly impacted psychologically by 9/11, and in ways like feeling anxious, feeling afraid of going outside, feeling afraid of the world, and that anxiety got transmitted, got like by osmosis to their kids. And that has made this whole generation who were raised by 9/11 parents much more afraid of the world, much more eager to have Big Brother take care of them, you know, like socialism and communism and all of that. And they don't even know why, for the most part. If I said this is why, you feel this way, I don't think most of them realize that or understand what I'm talking about, even because they weren't alive on 9/11. But you know, that is a big part of it for why, even not to do with Israel or for Jews or anything like that, just in general, before 10/7, this issue of wanting socialism, wanting communism, wanting a Big Brother to take care of them,
mm-hmm.
Has been around since a very long time.
It's kind of a sad state of affairs that people are being silenced for their, you know, it's always a tough concept for me as a kid. You know, we asked the Jewish kids in our neighborhood in Connecticut. We'd ask them like, well, what nationality are you? Because we were Irish Catholics, right? So, what nationality are you? And they'd say, well, we're Jewish. And I was like, yeah, but like, what nationality are you? Well, we're Jewish.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's your religion. Right, but that's our nationality. And that was such a hard concept. That was really a very difficult concept for a kid. But that is a nationality, and it is also a religion. And I don't think that's widely understood. You know, they're literally going at the Jewish community on all fronts. And then there's the history. Well, you know, that goes without saying.
Well, and you know, what people, I mean, that's part of the problem too. Like Jews in America, some are Zionists, some are more sort of in love with or dedicated to Israel than others. I mean, when I was going through temple school, for example, or even just in synagogue and services, loving Israel was inbred into you. You know, that was just part of being Jewish. But that's not the case with everybody, apparently, today, which is very sad. I mean, it was kind of shocking to me that people don't feel that kind of connection. I mean, of course, there are a lot of Jews who do. There are a lot of Christians who do. And who have been donating and so on to Israel after 10/7, and you know, so something has to be done with.
I'm kind of blown away at how much support this gets from the left. That is supporting it. I mean, that is the makeup on the left. It has a large Jewish following. And
well,
that also sort of doesn't make sense, but I get they see that as their, I don't know.
Well,
I guess I don't get it. I want to kick that
back.
Well,
you know, the thing is, in the past, Jews were predominantly Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the left has taken over the Democratic Party. And there are still Jews in there scratching their heads thinking, well, my grandfather, you know, voted Democrat and my grandmother did, so I guess I'm supposed to do that. But it's changed. They don't necessarily realize, not just Jews, but people in general don't realize how much the party has changed. Obviously some do when they've, you know, come to the middle or to the right. But I think a lot has to do with just history. When it was a party that was more about just like helping people and sort of in general, and a lot of Jewish people feel that way. I used to argue with my mother.
How'd that work out?
Yeah. Oh, she always voted Democrat, and when I was, you know, when I supported Trump, we used to get into arguments about that. But not arguments like people, like most of the people. I don't mean the typical kind of thing that's been happening in families where if you vote for the opposite candidate, like it's the end of families.
Yeah, we're all required to hate each other then. Yeah, that part.
Right. Yeah. So we would make kind of jokes about it. I'm not so sure if she thought it was as funny as I did, but in any case. So yes, there are a lot of things that need to be fixed in America. You know, like for example, the whole, you know, one of the things that needs to be fixed is that, you know, we haven't really gotten over COVID. We may have gotten over the spread of the disease, but the after effects are not over. It has left a very strange effect on us, and especially on kids. We were told during COVID that it would be, when it was over, everything would be wonderful. It would be better than before. And so when it was over, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and when it was over, it wasn't better than before. And a lot of people, I mean, we're all kind of in this existential sort of questionable space where we're still waiting for it to get better. And, you know, that the confusion, especially with kids not going to school during COVID, the confusion that all of that caused, that has contributed to this too, to, you know, it also has contributed to teachers being able to talk kids into, you know, because kids were so unhappy, it made it easier for teachers to talk kids into deciding that the reason for their unhappiness was because they were born in the wrong body. And that's where all this trans and you know, being the opposite sex than to what you were born as and so on, because the kids were so confused. And so it was very easy to tell them, oh, well, I have the answer. You know, it's just this.
Yeah. Or the people who think they're a cat or a dog or a badger or whatever they want to be these days. Yeah, those things are still kind of hard to explain. Actually, I struggle with those. We've done some interesting programs on that, and some of the roots of that are not as obvious. There's been a subtle shift over time. You know, the idea of morphing the word gender with the word sex, and all of us just thought it was so you didn't have to read the word sex on a form because we were all a bunch of Puritans, but it turned out no, there was kind of a long range plan on the whole gender deal. That was they were going to make those synonyms, which they are not. It's I want, when we come back, how about this? Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like you to talk about your book or whatever you want to talk about. But I do want to plug your book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My. Because it is smart to educate your kids on that. And I think people feel like, well, 9/11 happened, but, you know, now it's kind of not really a big thing anymore. It is a big thing.
Yes,
a big thing.
Absolutely.
And without some tools, it'll be a bigger thing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So our guest is Dr. Carol Lieberman, and you're listening to We the People. You can find this after the fact at wethepeopleradio.us. Drag it out, Bill.
Oh, I try.
Drag it out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You're a part of crack a do what the rest don't do. Don't face the fact that crack-a-bug's problems may have no other choice than to deport you.
I'm Jack Potter Jr., Tribal Chairman for Redding Rancheria. We've proudly partnered with the Redding Rodeo Association for Native American Appreciation Night. As you know, our roots and hearts are here in this community and are proud of this partnership. From grants to help local businesses and government, to making health care available to so many, to our own community events like the Stillwater Powwow that happens right here on this same land, Redding Rancheria is proud to play our part.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Reading Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Reading Bike Park. We just want to thank the Reading Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Enjoy this encore presentation of We the People Radio.
Seems more fitting every time we play it. It is kind of funny because if you do understand this, you do feel like the crazy one. Maybe you should have another podcast, Dr. Lieberman, for those of us who do get it, who are being told that we're all crazy. We can have the You're Just Fine podcast.
There we go.
So your book is designed for kids. I realize kids come in all ages, but what was your target on this?
Well, 9/11 is what changed my life. I had already moved to California by the time 9/11 happened, but my daughter, as I mentioned, was at school at Barnard, so she was, you know, in the middle of Manhattan and the ashes and all that. I asked myself when this happened, what is the most important thing that I can do to help people, because terrorism, I just knew, not that, to be honest, I never really, you know, studied terrorism or paid attention to terrorism, like in the news, that was one of the things, terrorism and sports were things that I didn't really have to read about,
right.
I thought, in order to, to cut down how much I had to pay attention to. But when 9/11 happened, I realized somehow that this was going to be the number one problem in our lifetime. And it is, although as you were saying before, a lot of people don't realize that. They are in denial. They think that 9/11 was one and done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is when I decided to devote myself to, first of all, you know, getting a good education in terrorism, and second of all, helping people, starting to help people with it. And so, of course, so I started by making an audio video program for airlines. The airlines played in their in-flight entertainment because, remember, like, people were very afraid to fly after 9/11 for a while. And so I did that, and then I had hotlines that I helped people, you know, who were just feeling bad about the after the attack. And then the next major thing that I did was my first book, Coping with Terrorism, Dreams Interrupted. I was asked to, a publisher in London had me write that book. I mean, I was looking for a publisher. They were looking for me. We found each other. And it was the one-year anniversary. This became the one-year anniversary book for London's 9/11, which was there 7/7/2005. So the book came out 7/7/2006. And I went over there and I, you know, did a lot of work, a lot of speeches and speaking engagements and media and so on, and helping them. I went to the cemeteries for the event that they had there and so on. And so then, my book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. And my book started winning awards. It's won 5 awards altogether. So London and Paris and Hollywood and New York and a Mom's Choice Award. And so when it won in England, for example, in London, I went to London to pick get the award, and also I did a lot of speaking engagements. And I also went to Manchester because they had had a terror attack fairly recently. And so then when I won in Paris, I went to Paris and I did speaking engagements. Also, I donated the books to libraries in these places. And I spoke to people, you know, one-on-one at different engagements. And of course, America. And then for the past 4 years, I've been, I started 4 years ago, I don't know, the idea just came to me, because I got so angry at how presidential administrations were not paying enough attention to 9/11, to the anniversary of 9/11. So I created a music video about 9/11 and why we should remember it and so on. And I had it going around on mobile billboards, you know, trucks playing the video on either side. And I also have it on my website.
I posted it on our page for today, too.
Oh,
it's really
great,
good.
Great. Thank you. Well, you know, the one that I did for last year, I sort of recreated it, the original one, because the original one was very warm and fuzzy. And last year, I realized we need more than warm and fuzzy. We need warnings. We need people to realize that terrorists are in our streets, including some of these protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made it a little more, you know, like to the point, to like, you know, wake up to what's going on. And then I also made one for the first anniversary of 10/7. And I put that on a mobile billboard, and that's on my website, too. So I wrote, I guess around the same time, I wrote the book. And the reason I wrote it for children and their parents and teachers. The first half of the book is for grown-ups, and the second half is a picture book for kids. So it's all the highlights of terrorism. It's like everything that you ever wanted to know or didn't.
Yeah.
As the case may be. Not in a super scary way, but also not in a sugar-coated way. For example, I talk about what is a terrorist. A terrorist is like a bully on the playground. So I have a picture of that. Then I talk about Osama bin Laden being the most famous and worst terrorist. And all the highlights, I talk about why we have to, you know, go through the TSA at the airport and the underwear bomber and the shoe bomber, you know, all the classic parts of terrorism, you know, in the history of terrorism. And, of course, 9/11 and Boston Marathon, the Florida nightclub. And then at the end, actually at the end of the parents and teachers part, I give 88 things to do with kids to help them build resilience. And then at the end of the children's part, I have 10 things that kids can do to help themselves to become more resilient. From getting a good night's sleep and getting exercise and eating healthy to not watching violent media to being tolerant to kids in school, you know, not like disliking kids because of how they're dressed, but being, you know, more tolerant. Looking at what's in their heart, being more tolerant, and so on. So that's kind of it's you know, it's people. I love doing talks about this with parents and kids or teachers and kids because it takes away the scariness of it, and yet it makes them. I talk about why they want to kill us. You know how that some they misinterpret their religion, which is kind of being a little generous.
I was going to say, how do you explain that? No wonder you have several degrees.
there is a saying, or there is a way of looking at it. I mean, I do say that, like on my podcast, Terror Therapist Podcast, I always have to remind myself to say, not all terrorists are Muslims, and not all Muslims are terrorists. But, you know, the truth is, that we also don't see a lot of Muslims protesting these protests, you know, saying that this is wrong. But Well, there was something in Europe. I mean, that's the thing, by the way. In America, we are so sheltered from what's really going on. First of all, anytime there's an attack, even if it's something, there was just one recently, like a lot of ramming attacks, that is a typical terrorist strategy, you know, to because it takes nothing. You don't have to figure out how to build a bomb. You just, you know, drive your truck or a big car into a group of people on the sidewalk. And yet, when things like that happen, and like the one that there was in New Orleans at the beginning of the year, and he had a flag in the back of his truck that was clearly an ISIS flag. It was black and white. It wasn't, you know, originally it wasn't unfurled, but you could see what it was.
Yeah.
And yet, the media and the authorities, the police, they don't want to say that these attacks are terrorism. So they, you know, wait forever, and then they don't show a picture of the perpetrator. And but if people were so protected by mainstream media, if people in America knew what was happening in Europe, and it's online, it's not like they can't know, they just don't look for it very much. But Europe is already, the radical Islamist migrants that have taken over Europe, France and England in particular, Belgium, Germany, you know, they are like finally waking up that they let too many radical Islamist migrants in,
mm-hmm.
and they are trying to have their own caliphate, and they're very
well. London had the no go zones at the beginning, and that's been years ago. It's like,
yes.
Hey guys, that should be a heads up. You have places your own citizens can't go.
Yeah, and they set up their Sharia law, and
that's right.
Yes, Sharia law, and in Texas now, you know that they're trying to set up an area, a whole commune. And so far, that's kind of, I don't see many people of any kind of religion or any from anybody protesting that. You know, this was actually on 9/11 when I started, you know, going to conferences and so on and learning from the people who have been knew about terrorism for years. They said back then that what terrorists are planning to do, and they were already starting, was to infiltrate, not just do a 9/11 attack, but to infiltrate the media, schools, the law, and they have been doing that.
Check, check, and check.
Very successful politics.
Yeah, they've done quite well in their plan.
So even though this was known, you know, 20 some odd years ago, this was allowed to happen.
Because it can't happen here, right?
Right, right.
Well, they've always been masters of the long game. You know, they got nothing but time on their hands.
Yes,
that's right. And they plan, and we don't, you're right, we don't identify what it's going to be like down the road and do anything about it. We wait till it develops into an issue, and then we react. And that doesn't work out real well.
So which psychological profile causes that? Is it that we have our head in the sand, which is the nice way of putting it, or that we basically... We don't wish anybody ill for the most part. Our society is sort of a, you know, live and let live for the most part. And so people don't really believe that somebody would secretly be, you know, sharpening their knife in the back room waiting for you.
Yes. Well, it's all of that. You know, and also people don't know history.
Well,
they don't know that it's 1,000 years ago that the plan of the terrorists was to take over not just the West, you know, the West, but then all of the world. And they're doing a pretty damn good job of it. Because Israel, you know, Israel is the canary in the coal mine, but
mm-hmm.
it's not about just destroying Israel.
No, it certainly isn't. It goes all the way back. And just, you know, if someone's kind of curious about some of the history on this, we've got, I have no idea how many shows this is, 24 shows maybe, dating back to March of 2011, about actually about Islam. And if somebody would like a good book and you're thinking, well, you know, all this stuff is so heavily politicized and it's all opinion, there's a book called It's All About Muhammad, written by a guy named F.W. Burley. It's Frank Burley, B-U-R-L-E-I-G-H. Don't remember the year of that book, but I have it posted on our, we have a tab on the website that is Islam. So all the shows we did are all right in one place. They're free to listen to. They've got all sorts of backup. And this book is loaded with great information.
Oh, and it's all
annotated.
Annotated in the back, yeah.
So please do that.
Yeah, you can't put it down.
Holy cow, we're out of time. What? How does this happen? Dr. Kara Lieberman, we're sorry we have to run away.
Yes.
We'll miss you when you're gone. Thank you so much for spending time with us. We'll call you again on a different day.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Dr. Kara Lieberman, you can find her at wethepeopleradio.us. I cheated, Bill.
Yeah. Again.
Push the button.
Yeah.
Boom. No sound.
No sound.
It's silent, just us. Guess we'll sing along. Ain't No Rest for the Wicked. Coming in anytime now.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.